It's June 22nd, 2016, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's tech and science. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa. We're going to start this hour diving into the local tech calendar, a couple of great events to tell you about. Ross Mukai from Oahu Makerspace is here to tell us about the third annual Honolulu Mini Maker Fair coming up on Saturday. Then Shanoa Farnsworth is back. She's from Blue Startups, and she's going to tell us about the upcoming Startup Paradise Showcase.
And finally, after the break, we'll learn about the life as a modern musician. Of course, joining us in the studio will be Chaz Umamoto from Streetlight Cadence and John Yamasato from High Sessions.
How do you leverage tech to launch a band in 2016? Of course, we always welcome your comments and questions as part of the conversation as well. You can contact us by calling in or sending us a tweet after the break.
And of course, we want to just get right into what our news guests have to share with us. And of course, I'm all excited about the third annual Mini Maker Fair and want to welcome Ross Mukai from Oahu Makerspace. Welcome to the show, Ross.
Thanks, Bert. I love this show.
Oh, well, that's good.
Loves
my favorite show to be on.
So, Ross, you know, the Mini Maker Fair, third annual, it's growing every year, and there are booths that run the gamut from just about anything you can think of. And I won't pull any of your, steal any of your thunder, so I want you to share what do you expect out of this year's Mini Maker Fair.
So the Mini Maker Fair is kind of like it's a collection of everybody that's doing anything creative and wonderful, everything from entrepreneurs with businesses that they're creating in their garages or whatever they're doing to people just doing crafts that they want to share with people. And I think we'll see a lot of cool tech stuff. We've got Raspberry Pi workshops, learn how to do soldering workshops. We've got some Arduino projects coming in.
Mm-hmm. Now, Oahu Makerspace, what do you have on your slate of let's say, activities to showcase?
Well, we do have a table for our shop, and I think we're going to be doing a lot of 3D printing stuff. And the coolest thing, I think, one of the cool things we're going to be showing is an Axie Draw, or the Forksie Draw, which is the open source version. And it's basically a CNC plotter that holds a pen and writes however you want it to write.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like a spirograph, but much more high-tech.
Yeah, yeah. And it's good because it really helps you to visualize Cartesian coordinates, like X, Y, Z, all these directions.
Did you just go math on us?
Oh, it's the basis for 3D printing,
okay,
for laser cutters, CNC machines. They all rely on X, Y, and Z as directions.
Now, the maker movement has seen support and advancement, especially because of its value for STEM education, to advocate engineering and technical expertise and skills in education. There's a White House Mini Maker Fair. They just had last week, I think, the National Maker Fair. But I know a lot of people, when they hear that, they think, like you mentioned, Arduino, which are great, and you know, chip hackers and chip tunes. But when you said anything that's creative, that includes people who knit, for example. Even people who sell things on Etsy, wouldn't they qualify as makers as well?
Oh, definitely. People that are doing crafts and either selling them or doing crafts just because they enjoy them and want to share them with people. We even have a lot of less high-tech stuff happening. We've got blacksmithing demonstrations.
Blacksmithing?
Yeah, like hammer, forge, fire, anvils, everything.
I think every year there's been a blacksmithing booth and exhibit, right?
Yeah, he blacksmiths at our shop.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be on the fourth floor in the corner. On the baseball field, we've got a drone competition. They're going to be doing skills and speed races, live competition everybody can check out.
Well, you know, with the new certification process with the FAA, I think there's going to be just growing interest in drone flying.
And actually, one of our guest speakers is going to talk a lot about that too. I think the drone legislation and the new developments with the FAA.
Is that going to be Ted Ralston?
Yep, Ted Ralston. He's going to be doing
the godfather of Hawaii drones. Absolutely.
We have a couple of breakout rooms for seminars, including the Raspberry Pi class and other guest speakers.
Mm-hmm. Now, when the planning of the Mini Maker Fair goes on, let's say a couple months before, how is it that you are reaching out to any of these exhibitors? I mean, is it something that they already know about and they're calling you up, or do you have to kind of like reach out to the community and see if, you know, there's interest in participating?
It's kind of a mix of both. We go through the entire Mini Maker Fair planning committee. We spend a few months just talking about what should we do? Should we do this? Who should we call? Anybody got anybody to call? So everybody calls everybody that they know, and we try and find people. And hopefully some of the people that we call will be like, oh, you should call this guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, we should see if these people can get involved too. So, I mean, we miss some people, but we try and get them to show up at the fair and talk to us and say, hey, we want to be there next year.
Mm-hmm. And it is not necessarily just a Oahu or Honolulu thing. I mean, you are with Oahu Makerspace, but there are maker communities on other islands, and at least some of them are able to make the trip.
Yep, we've got the Makerspace people from Kauai and Maui coming in. We also have an R2-D2 club and a few other R2-D2 builders coming in from California.
So they just like to build R2-D2s?
Yep. That's the whole club.
Okay.
Wow, interesting. Now, I was under the impression that the one of the neighbor island Makerspaces was pretty heavily involved with helping to plan and you know, be involved with this Maker Fair.
Oh, yeah. We get a lot of support from actually Kauai, led by Carl, mm-hmm. and Maui Makers, led by Laura folks. They're on the planning committee, and we get a lot of support from them.
Mm-hmm.
Really, we really like to rely on our sponsors, guys like HTDC and Entrepreneurs Foundation that give us a lot of, you know, the wheels that need to get greased that the whole show can roll.
I mean, I know the organizing committee is all volunteer, and certainly it does take resources to make something happen. You mentioned some of the sponsors. Iolani School has been the host for how many years now?
All 3 years, Iolani School has been the host, and they've been very gracious as our show has grown. I think right now we're actually at 997 pre-registered attendees on Eventbrite.
Well, after this radio show, I'm sure you're going to hit that 998.
You know, I gave it three. At least okay. I gave it three.
We can do that. Well, it's a great event. It's family friendly. Are there going to be specific activities and workshops for young people?
Yes, we do have a the itty bitty circuits.
Mm-hmm.
That's a more kid oriented event.
Is it little bits?
Yep. The itty bitty circuits club uses little bits for their workshop.
Gotcha.
Great. And then you said, so this is a combination. I also noticed on the marketing that went out that is TEDx involved with this, or is that some just kind of
one of the
promotion
exhibitors.
TEDx is going to be an exhibitor at the Mini Maker Fair as well. They have a table, and they're going to be doing like a live capture your story event, or kind of like a continuous thing throughout the day.
So it's not like they're going to be doing their TEDx talks
The
Mini Maker Fair.
There, because their event is actually pretty close to ours. It's like the 9th, I think.
Oh, okay, mm-hmm. okay.
So they're going straight from us to there, and.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, I love the event. And you know, makers are such a diverse group. I remember the Ghostbusters group just showing off their very, you know, elaborate gear and the new movie coming out. I'm sure they're a very, very busy group. Do you know if they're participating this year?
Yes. Hawaii Ghostbusters is going to be there. And if all goes well, we'll have an Ecto-1.
Uh-huh. Just parked somewhere, I suppose.
We laid out the parking and hopefully everything comes together for
that. I remember there was a big model of one of the Star Trek vessels that somebody brought. I mean, the guy was just a fanatic model maker, and that was one of the exhibits that he brought.
Yep, that's Roger. He'll be back also with a larger model of something else.
Okay, and then the other group that I recall was the Hawaii Inventors Group. Are they back? There's always some
interesting. That's
Roger's group. Yeah, right. That's the Inventors Association. I'm not really sure. I think mm-hmm. they may have a presence there.
Well, mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is, I would say, Bert, I mean, if you're listening to this show, the people that we love to interview and hear about, they're almost always the exact kind of people you get to meet at the Honolulu Mini Maker Fair. I know Computational Thinkers, we've had them on the show. They're going to be one of the participants as well.
Well, we haven't even talked about the VR guys. I mean, there's probably a slew of VR headsets that are going to be demonstrated.
Yes. And I know one of them involves a HoloLens. But I'm not sure how involved or demo that is, because it's pretty expensive hardware.
Right, right.
Yeah,
you're just going to have to come down and find it out. So this event is happening on Saturday. So what are the details?
This Saturday.
And it's free.
It's free. It's at Iolani School. They have a parking structure with free parking as long as it lasts. And it's going from noon to 5 this Saturday.
Now, wasn't it like earlier in the day before, or was it always kind of like noon to 5?
No, it was always noon to 5, but people would start showing up at 10 and we'd be setting
up. Maybe that's
like,
why.
Whoa, you're a little early.
okay.
Well, they need time to set up.
Yeah, that's true. Okay. So, Iolani, this Saturday, noon to 5 o'clock, it's going to be like, it's going to take over that whole Sullivan Center as well as the, I think, the baseball field with the...
Yep. We're sprawling the whole Sullivan Center into the courtyards, Seto Hall, baseball field, everywhere.
So where can someone go to find more information about this great event?
At MakerFairHonolulu.com.
Fantastic.
Very good. Well, thanks, Ross, for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
It is.
And, of course, next up we have Shanoa Farnsworth from Blue Startups, and she's got an exciting showcase coming up called the Startup Paradise Showcase. And, of course, they're going to feature Cohort 7. Shanoa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks
welcome
for
back.
Having me, guys.
Yeah, so usually there's like a demo day kind of scheduled around this time. So
yeah.
what is the showcase? Is it a little bit of a change up? Or?
So it's pretty much the same thing that we've had, but we've just kind of opened, you know, mm-hmm. the stage, if you will, to other ecosystem partners, we call them. So basically anyone, it's kind of open invitation to people that are involved in this space in Hawaii, working with startups, working in tech. And we just put the word out that we would welcome you to share what you're doing with mm-hmm. the community on the stage. As long as we're gathering people together, we might as well make our best use of that time and the stage that we have. So in addition to the Blue Startups Cohort 7 Demo Day, which would be your traditional demo day, we'll have 8 companies pitching there. And then we will also have kind of, I'll call it updates mm-hmm. from different players. So Accelerate UH, we'll talk about what they're doing, Energy Accelerator, HTDC, Dev League. We'll have Luis Oliveria there from mm-hmm. DBED giving the, kind of the state perspective on Startup Paradise and high growth mm-hmm. and where they see all that going. So, you know, kind of a big gathering, hopefully the whole ecosystem.
Now, when you have the Blue Startup cohort go up there, they usually have a parameter upon which they have to deliver their pitch, which might be, I don't know, 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of used to that. But what if you have the HTDC folks up? Are they set within the boundaries of a pitch?
That's a good idea. I like that idea.
What did you tell them to come up and do?
Oh, I think I'm going to go with that. I think that's good.
Now, I would love to see Robbie go up there and just
give a
do
pitch,
like
right?
a pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like this. I like this idea. So I think I'm taking that with me.
That's right. Give them like the 3 minutes and maybe slides. Maybe make them auto-advance.
Auto-advance?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So a little intro music. You got to, yeah. So... That would be really fun. The other interesting thing we're doing this go-around, which we haven't done before, because we only have 8 teams pitching this time, sometimes Startup Paradise Demo Day, we have up to 30 if all the accelerators are pitching at the same time.
Right.
So since we have a little more leeway this time, we're actually also inviting in a panel. We're calling it a CEO panel.
Mm-hmm.
And these are business leaders, from Honolulu that are going to ask tough questions. So we really want to try to engage more, business kind of mainstay businesses into the startup arena.
Kind of describe this experience to me. You have the CEOs, they're sitting on a panel.
Yeah.
And who is asking the tough questions? Are the CEOs asking the tough questions of
the presenters?
Of the presenters?
Yes.
Oh, I see. So
yes.
They are actually drilling.
They're drilling. So from their perspective as an industry leader, so for example, if we have somebody from the tourism industry and they're mm-hmm. going to be drilling down on our travel technology company.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be coming at that from the industry perspective.
So it's not just a straight pitch. It's going to be also kind of a judging.
We don't want to say judging, but yes, we are referring to them as kind of CEO sharks and sharks in quotations. Obviously, they're not investors, but they are potential beta customers. So it's that kind of interaction that we're hoping for.
And I like that there's the opportunity, perhaps more of an in-depth conversation. You mentioned that sometimes when all of the accelerators are running at the same time, they're each going to send 5 or 6 companies, and then that's 15 to 20 pitches.
Yeah, that's all the time you have.
But just because of the way the schedule worked out for this event, like the Energy Accelerator UH, they're not at the point where they're pitching. So
that's right.
We are going to be talking specifically to members of your current Lucky 7th cohort mm-hmm. on next week's show, but mm-hmm. in the hopes of still not giving away too much of that Thunder, who are some of the presenters at Startup Paradise Showcase from your cohort that you are that you'd like to preview?
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have like a strong number of local companies as well as companies from elsewhere. So a couple things that are interesting in this cohort, we have a company called Safe Chats. They came all the way from Singapore to participate in the program. And in fact, they were a participant in East Meets West last year in the MCAP Challenge, if you remember that contest, and they were one of the winners. So we invited them to come back and participate in Blue Startups. So it's fun to see them come back through. We have another team, Activator, that we talked about a little bit before the show. They are in the travel, you know, and technology space. Again, we think that's a really great space for Hawaii to be a leader in. And Hawaii has a big competitive advantage there in the activity space, which in Hawaii alone is a $1.3 billion space. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty exciting space. It's a, you know, it's actually a market that we are on the front line. So it's a good fit for Hawaii.
And a lot of people might assume that when you're talking about startups these days, it's all about apps. Apps this, apps that. What does your app do? There's an app for that. But the great thing about our ecosystem is that it covers a pretty broad spectrum as well. One of your presenters, also I think from East Meets West, but then coming up for Startup Paradise Showcase is iFirst Medical.
Right.
And that's a pretty specialized thing that they're trying to accomplish.
It is. It's a medical device company, which is a first for us, but it is based on the iPhone. So that's the underlying technology. So we're excited about them as well, because again, this is homegrown technology. They were DOD funded before. They had grants from various federal agencies, but that got them to this point. So now we're hoping to take it the rest of the way and make this a commercial project.
Now, Chanel, you said that there's a company from Singapore that you have in the cohort, and in last cohort six had a company from Singapore. Is there something like going on with Singapore?
It's interesting, right? We do find that the applicants from Singapore are very strong. They are strong entrepreneurs. They're very hardworking, and they're very interested in the United States because Singapore is a relatively small market for them. So all of those things combined in strong English skills. It's kind of interesting, actually, this team, the entrepreneurs, part of the team is from Russia. So the pitch person that you'll see on stage in a couple of weeks is Russian, and then his co-founder is Singaporean. So it's very international. As you know, all of kind of the entrepreneurial world is getting more and more international these days. So it's really interesting.
Well, it's great to hear that Blue Startups is kind of getting out into that international marketplace and getting sort of the word of mouth awareness with the startup community in places as far away as Singapore.
Certainly
it's
Asia.
It's fantastic, yeah, in Asia. I was just at the Rise conference in Hong Kong, which is a very large tech conference there. It's put on by the same guys that do the Web Summit in Dublin, which will be in Lisbon this year. 10,000 people. And we are very well known there, which is fantastic. People have heard about us. They've heard about East Meets West. They've heard about Startup Paradise. So the word is getting out, and I think we're in a great position to really leverage that.
Oh, great.
So this event is coming up next month, Friday the 8th, July 8th. Who are the people you're expecting to draw? I mean, what's the pitch to attendees?
Yeah, I think the pitch to attendees is, you know, the usual thing of come check out what's the latest, greatest in Startup Paradise and the ecosystem. We haven't had a large event for a while, so this is a good way to get current and get networked with everybody. And then the addition of kind of a little bit more corporate involvement, which I think is interesting. This event is sponsored by Verizon. That's a first. It is also sponsored by High Growth, the state of Hawaii's initiative. But to have a lot more kind of corporate participation is pretty exciting for us in terms of the interaction between the companies and other entrepreneurs and the business community. So that's the new twist, I guess, with this event.
No, it's always great to sort of broaden the circle of awareness for what you folks are doing with all of us in this ecosystem, you know, with regard to entrepreneurship, you know, startups and technology. So great job. So thanks, Chanoa. I mean, anything else? Where can people go to find out about this event?
Yeah, there's a link on our website, bluestartups.com. takes you to the Eventbrite link.
It's only $20,
right? It's only $20.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks to Verizon and, right, and the state of Hawaii, it's only $20. So.
And there's always some great refreshments.
And this is at the Cancer Center.
It's at the Cancer Center. So also thanks to the University of Hawaii for allowing us to use that space. It's very nice space for this event.
Very good. Excellent. Well, thanks, Shanoa, for joining us.
Okay, thanks, guys.
And, of course, we'll take a short break. And when we return, we'll be joined by Chaz Umamoto from Streetlight Cadence and John Yamasato from High Sessions to talk about breaking into the music biz.
The good news these days is that any artist can reach a global audience. The bad news is that any artist can reach a global audience. So how does a band succeed in the world of YouTube and Facebook? We'd, of course, love your questions as part of the conversation, so you can give us a call at 941-3689 or toll-free from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689.
And, of course, we're live here in the studio. You can tweet us your questions at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
My name is Amy Hennessy, and I'm from Ulupono Initiative, and we're proud to be supporters of Hawaii Public Radio through the underwriting program. The decision to be an underwriter was really clear. We had been pretty quiet about the work that we were doing. We wanted to just do the work, and we found that it was important for people to understand a little bit more about who we were and what we were trying to do, and we felt like Hawaii Public Radio was the right place to get that message out.
Hawaii Public Radio, celebrating partnership, building community.
For the first time, Kuana Torres Kahele and various hula halau will be performing the new music he has created for the Hawaiian Islands across two back-to-back concerts. This year's HPR Palikū Theater event on August 7th gives you the choice of an afternoon or an evening performance, or choose both and enjoy a mini luau between shows. Please go to events on hawaiipublicradio.org for more. Kuana Torres Kahele, August 7th at the Palikū Theater.
Yeah. Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And, of course, joining us today are Chaz Umamoto and John Yamasato. Chaz plays guitar, ukulele, and other instruments, of course, for Streetlight Cadence. And when he's not playing, he's managing band affairs.
Well, John is a longtime musician with Pure Heart, produces band videos at High Sessions, sells real estate for locations, and, at least according to his Twitter bio, is also a nude model. We might ask him about that.
I will definitely ask him about that. Of course, what does it take to survive in this music business, and does it have to include nude modeling? We'll find out. And, of course, we love to hear your questions and comments. And that number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu, or 877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. We want to welcome you all to Bite Marks Cafe.
Oh, well, thank you, both of you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, welcome. Before we get to the nude modeling, Chaz, I want to get a little background from you. Did you get the start? No.
Well, former life.
Tell us a little bit about the, I like the history story about Streetlight Cadence and how the band sort of came together.
Sure thing. So I think a lot of people assume we were just friends in college, but John and Brian came on full-ride scholarships to HPU to play in the orchestra. So one from San Diego, one from Houston. John was a struggling college student. He didn't have money for food, and so he would go on the streets, play on sidewalks of Waikiki on Kalakaua, make a little bit of money. One day he gets punched in the face, gets knocked out, someone steals his money. And so he found Jesse on Craigslist, who was at the University of Hawaii. And Jesse plays the accordion, and so he found out Jesse was a black belt. So that's how Jesse comes into the picture.
Huh. Brian's a musician and a martial artist.
And then they walk into a sandwich shop called Stortles one day on Wailea, and there I was doing sound for them, and it was kind of a marriage from that point on.
So you didn't come on because you had another black belt or you had some
I actually do.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
So really, it started because the first musician who got beat up needed to have protection.
Security.
And rather than being a solo artist, it's better to be in a band.
He's a pacifist, and everyone else around him has studied martial arts. So it's kind of, that's a secret, though. We don't even tell people that.
So no, that's a great story.
Streetlight Cadence, of course, has had massive success for good reason and in Honolulu, and is now, you know, seeking its fortunes elsewhere. But one thing that I think that stands out, and you've even performed here at Hawaii Public Radio in Atherton Theater, is that you have what has to be described as a very distinct and unique kind of sound. How would you describe that to someone who, for some reason, has managed to miss Streetlight Cadence?
I describe it as four classically trained musicians writing pop music, but we perform it with weird instruments. So there's a violin, cello, accordion, guitar, sometimes ukulele. The music supervisors and publishers of the world have categorized this as alternative folk pop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great.
And now, you say that in the sense that you might not necessarily agree with that narrow?
I think it's an okay label. It helps describe it because now, yeah, it's fine. We live with it.
Well, you know, music reporters and journalists will always try to find some descriptions, and ultimately those descriptions might tend to pigeonhole you in a particular area.
Sure, so, sure.
You know, that's the nature of the game. Now, John, you you have had a fairly long history in being in a band, Pure
yeah, I'm
Heart,
an old
right?
Guy.
I wasn't going to say time. That because that might drag me into
He looks younger than all of us.
Mm-hmm. But I've been around a long time, yes.
And you've gone through a number of different sort of business opportunities, I guess, with music. And I kind of want to hear what your most recent involvement with, let's say, High Sessions is.
So High Sessions, I started it really as a hobby, as something that I tell my wife, you know, guys, a lot of people golf. This will be my golf. I want to once a month shoot video, invite my music friends over. And from there, it sprouted into what is now known as High Sessions, the show and all those things. Mm-hmm, so it really did not start off as, hey, I want to go and produce a something that's going to create income or whatnot. It was really, I need an outlet so I can talk to my music friends. I know that I can't start another band. I just don't have the time to do that. So if I go once a month and I'm with my buddies and we're doing this, that's my thing. So that's really how it started.
Well, can I ask? So, you know, you were in a band, you were a musician yourself, you play, yeah. You perform, and you say you needed an outlet. A lot of people would say, well, that would be performing music. But you said, you know, not enough time to be in a band.
Right.
How did the audio, visual, video production and all of the technical things that go with it become part of your interest, your outlet once a month?
Well, it was a little serendipitous in that. At the time, my daughter was two, and she was watching YouTube videos, Taylor Swift and all those things. They had a lot of online shows, and I was looking at that going, that doesn't look that hard to do. You know. And then my buddy Dave, who was for a long time, 20 years in the internet business, doing first web hosting and then graphics and then went into web design and all that kind of stuff, really was trying to get into video production. So I pitched it to Dave as, hey, I have this idea. You can practice your video production, and at the same time, I get to invite my musician friends over, and we're going to create this product and help out artists in the meantime. So that was the brainchild of how it all came together.
You know, I was going to say that as a musician, you probably naturally have this innate skill to understand what's the best arrangement for sound. And so, you know, when you arrange a band, you know how to capture their best sound. But now you've already answered the question, how did you incorporate the video piece of it?
Yeah, so Dave was paramount in getting the video part together. Mm-hmm. You know, and then for a long time, I had my own recording studio. And so we had guys that used to work there, so I just got them to come and do the sound. Because the thing that I also found is whenever you're doing television or even on YouTube, the sound's always terrible. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have the sound be really thought through more than your typical, oh, we'll just plug it right into the board and pull out the feed and upload it into the video, yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you, John, but I'm also going to ask Chaz because I believe he has experience in this space as well. I'm curious about the musicians that participate. Now, certainly it sounds like fun. Hey, let's hang out with musicians and make a video and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it also sounds like it's probably a need that some musicians have. I mean, certainly they're always looking for good recording studios and good opportunities to produce music. But I'm sure they're also looking at YouTube and saying, how can we make a nice video? So, mm-hmm. I mean, was that also in your motivation? And is that what drives them to come down?
Well, definitely I did my homework and I searched Makaha Sons, and I remember searching Kaylee Irishel, and I would look through YouTube, and I'm like, man, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. Even these are the top of the hill when you get to Hawaiian musicians, and they do not have good produced quality videos. So if we can do that, then I'm sure we can get artists that are interested in having that produced come on a show. You know, so that was my guess. And yeah, for the most part, it's been that way.
I can't tell you about how many opportunities we've had just because we've been on a show and we had this video that we could show other people as a reference. You know, it goes such a long way, and they make it so seamless, the process.
So, I mean, you were making music before you met, but were featured on High Sessions. So were you specifically saying we need a video in? I mean, I think one thing that we certainly learn in radio is that it's actually right now there's social sharing for pictures, social sharing for text, social sharing for videos, but it's really hard to get audio to go viral. But video seems to be a pretty effective vector for music.
Yeah, the... seeing it, there's something special about that visual aspect, especially for the generation right now, you know, because there's so much direct access to so many different things. But for music, like, I spend more time watching bands play on YouTube than I actually do looking and finding their records and listening to it on Spotify.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I want to kind of get a little, both of you to kind of respond to this. So when you were looking at options to, let's say, create your video, were there limited options? And how did you end up going to High Sessions?
There are definitely limited options in Hawaii. And I come from a sound background, and I shadowed like studio engineers, and I was a roadie for like my dad's band. And I know there's a lot of work that goes into making these videos. My wife also works in video. And it was very clear that they were the only ones that were doing this and producing at a high quality. And so I know Dave personally. I love Dave, his video guy. And so I was, for a good while, I was like, hey, Dave, want to come check out High Sessions? You know,
this is Dave Kusumoto.
Right, that's Dave Kusumoto. Right.
And, you know, and a band like Chaz's band, they are so visual. I mean, when you see them, it's so...
mesmerizing.
Yeah, you know, just listening is one thing, but when you see what they're doing, it's like, oh my God, the guy is playing the accordion and he's kicking the the cajon at the same time.
Yeah,
you know, you don't get that when you're just listening to the CD. So,
so did you identify this as a niche that wasn't being fulfilled in Hawaii? And because nowadays I saw you guys in the Atherton, and I, you know, whipped out my phone and did a Periscope and thought, okay, you guys got a video, right? You know, cool.
Yeah.
But obviously there's a niche for some pretty high quality video, and maybe you can share. Affordable?
I mean, if I were an artist myself, I mean, you're pitching yourself to not only your fan base, but if you want to do corporate gigs, or if you want people to just, you know, you're going to do a festival in Texas, they want to kind of see what you're all about, and if you can send something that's a little bit polished that really represents you well, it's, to me, as an artist, I would want that. And,
a lot of times, though, I liked your story of trying to look for Kaylee Rachel, and probably the only videos you found are people in audiences trying to hold the phone steady while they're dancing at the same time.
Right.
I mean, it's actually hard to see something produced, but I'll also ask you a challenging question, because it appears that the trend in media is less polished, more raw. It's all about vertical Snapchat shaky video rather than, you know, dollies and great lighting. Is that instantaneous but spontaneous kind of feel something that is going to be a problem, or might reduce some of the benefits of high end production?
I don't know if I agree with that entirely, because High Sessions is a live performance still. You know, it's not scripted. It's not something that they visually do and then you replace the audio later. And I think it's different. You can watch a music video of the band, but when you see that live performance and it sounds good, because it is, the obstacle is capturing the audio in a way that is accurate but also serves it and presents it in a nice way.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, I do a little bit agree with Ryan in the sense that we found very quickly that high quality does not mean more views. There are people that, you know, just film with their camcorder in their house and they get a ton more views. Yeah, so that's not the magic bullet. But artists still would need something nice that they can be proud of, they can share.
It's like a portfolio.
They just don't have it. So,
well, you know, and speaking of magic bullets, I mean, if you were in a band, let's say, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, the magic bullet was get on a record label and try to get some distribution and get airplay on a thing called a radio. But what is it now? I mean, is it?
That's a good question for Chaz, because we were talking about this outside. I have no idea. I really don't.
So, Chaz, you got an idea?
It's so different now. You know, And I think it has changed a lot because of shows like American Idol and The Voice. So you have artists that will go on the show. You're broadcasted to millions, billions of people. And so you have an audience. You get off the show. You know, part of being on the show, you have to sign a deal. They already take, mm-hmm. and they can represent you in any way. You mm-hmm. get off the show. They put you with their management company. And then you go put out a record of the songs they choose for you. And they own you in what's called a 360 deal. So they take a little percentage of everything versus in the old days, it was like, they took a large chunk of one thing, mm-hmm. and you do one record versus several records, and then it's on to the next one. So there's no artistic development. You are just, you have to be ready. They use you, on to the next person, or they find you on YouTube. You have a million hits, on to the next person, on to the next person.
So is that something that Streetlight Cadence aspires to, or is there something else that you want to leverage to get mm-hmm. you know, a viewership?
It's definitely still necessary for the artist to have viewership and be broadcasted to like a large amount of people, but to give away your rights, I think that's something that we don't particularly aspire to. We've worked really hard to maintain a sort of like moral, ethical boundary for mm-hmm. our group as a band and also as a business. And for us, it's really important now to stay independent. Even though we live in the heart of the music industry, we want to hack our way through the music industry. We've always kind of seen ourselves as a startup. And in order to keep being independent, we have to bypass the record label. So why would we let the record label take all of our rights and then give us a $500,000 or $1 million loan that we have to pay back in order to hire a marketing agency to put our music on the radio or mm-hmm. to pay for our record? We can use Kickstarter. Like High Sessions mm-hmm. done the same thing. They've had a Kickstarter. Yep. And so our fan base can be our record label. They can help us make the project and give us the budget to create. It's like pre-sales, you know, to create mm-hmm. that project. Mm-hmm. And why do we need to take the loan if we know the marketing agency already and we just go straight to them and then pay them to do essentially the same thing?
Mm-hmm. And well, I did donate to Streetlight Cadence's last album. Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
Well, John, I do want to talk a little bit more about the business model on your side, but
right.
Focusing specifically on the band a little bit longer, Chaz, sure. mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people have a romantic view that the new, the completely turned upside down mm-hmm. model of the future, instead of a music label that owns everything and you just get mm-hmm. a tiny piece of like 3 cents for every play
sure,
or
yeah.
something, that you just go out on your own and you promote yourself and you market yourself and you do your own merchandising, and maybe it's in live performances and selling tickets that you pay the bills. But mm-hmm. the other problem with that model is there's no gatekeeper. So you're up against every single other mm-hmm. YouTube-empowered or band, you know, Bandcamp-empowered or mm-hmm. Kickstarter-empowered
right.
musician. So in many ways, you also have much more competition. Perhaps.
True.
So how would you articulate your success? I like how you described your band as a startup. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the conversation we were interested in. But it can't be easy. There, mm-hmm. there is a struggle that way, too.
We plan out a year in three-month cycles. So there's four seasons. And so for 3 months, we'll focus just on one campaign. So that could be like a contest. It could be a music video. It could be another record. And in the meantime, we're just getting ready for the next thing. And so that's kind of what keeps us going. And we try to dive into like different aspects, not just the performance, but also in the writing. So we write a lot of music as a group. Everyone in the group writes, and we try to pitch it actively to publishers, music supervisors for film and TV. And that's really like, those are the people that are actually still getting paid. It's the most ethical part of our industry, is these people that maybe they were once upon a time like college DJs or like songwriters, and now they can make a piece of music that's used in television or film and profit, you know, in significant numbers.
So versus 3 cents per play on Spotify,
talking about like a couple thousand,
right? You turn up on Hawaii 5-0 on CBS, and they mm-hmm. they give, it sounds to me like, something that you would feel is worth your time to participate.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I hope everybody out there who's a musician that's listening to Chaz right now, because most musicians do not think like this. You know, planning, thinking about different revenue streams. I mean, I've been in this business for 20 years, and I'd say about 3% of everybody I talk to thinks about this. The guys who do very well. You can make a living and do well doing music, but you have to have a plan, and you have to put some thought into, all right, I want to be an artist. I want to be artistic. I want to do things. But at the same time, I have to survive.
You have to
right?
eat.
Yeah, I have to, mm-hmm. have to be able to eat. So how can I turn my passion into something that's profitable?
And how do you balance that wanting to be an artist, because I can see many musicians who say, well, all I do is make music. Right. Someone else has to worry about other stuff. How do you balance? Because I love that you're classically trained and you probably think very deeply about the music you compose. Mm-hmm. How do you carve that time when you're also thinking as a startup, as a business?
Oh, man. You know, read those Stephen Covey books. You know, you have to learn how to manage your time very well. Like, I've worked in admin positions before the music really took off. I've worked for like a corporate company that did sound. So to me, the business is just as important as the artistic side. You know, the balance between being left and right brain, you know, is super, super, super important to what we do. So we set aside time for rehearsing, recording, writing. But there's also the business meetings. There's also the video planning. And we operate 5 days a week and we take 2 days off just like anyone else. But there's a lot more that we have to do versus relying on other people.
So, Chaz, you know, I do want to explore your decision to move from Hawaii to L.A., and also the idea of hacking the music biz.
Sure.
So we want to hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with both Chaz Umamoto from Streetlight Cadence and John Yamasata from High Sessions about hacking the music biz.
You can also tweet us if you've got a question or give us a call at 941-3689 or from the Neighbor Islands 877-941-3689. You are listening to Bite Marks Cafe.
Almost 15 years ago, the biggest real estate deal in the history of Manhattan gets signed, and then
6 weeks later, the Twin Towers go down. And to his credit, he was determined to rebuild, and he was relentless in his efforts.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, One World Trade, the biography of a building, next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6, following Bite Marks Cafe.
It's been a long campaign.
The 2016 presidential race is now underway.
Out of 16 candidates,
Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, John Kasich, Rand Paul, Scott
Total Walton, and complete shutdown of Muslims entering
Don't
the United States.
Don't you someday want to see a woman president of the United
and
States?
And we will not accept a rigged economy.
And there's more to come. We're going to help you keep up and make sense of things from now until November. Listen every day.
Weekdays at noon. Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk show programming. Mahalo to contributors Bush Consulting and Sacred Hearts Academy.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ran Ozawa. We're talking to Chaz Umamoto from Streetlight Cadence and John Yamasato from High Sessions about succeeding in the modern music industry.
And of course, you can give us a call. That number is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. And of course, right before the break, we were talking about hacking the music biz. But one of the things that I heard you say, Chaz, is that you actually had to decide to leave Hawaii in order to, you know, make it in this business. And, you know, we have talked to a number of entrepreneurs and startups and especially in the sort of tech arena. There's always this point in time when people have to decide, do I try to make it in Hawaii or do I try to get into a market where it's a lot more vibrant? What went through your mind in terms of, you know, the band's decision to move?
Well, L.A. is a necessary evil for us. And we love Hawaii. This is where we're from. We were here for 6.5 years being the band. And we needed to challenge ourselves even further. Hawaii is a great incubator for talent and for ideas. And that's why what comes out of here is always so unique, not just in the product or like what it is you do, but also in the personality because of the culture. And for us as a group, we had like a list of goals that we wrote down over the years. You know, every 3 months, like, okay, let's try to do this goal. Let's try to do this goal. And then that list dwindled, you know, one after another. And we thought, oh, my God, like we have to try something different. We have to get out of here because there's so many people that were counting on us to take this further, especially once we made the jump to being a full-time business. And in order to honor those people and, you know, like really just give it our best shot while we still had the time to do it, we knew that we had to move away. And so we traveled across the country on quote-unquote tour, which is really just street performing in a bunch of cities. And we went down the East Coast, South, the West Coast at the wrong times of the year because we were in the West, you know, during the winter, and we were in the South and East during the summer. So it was bad. But out of all those places, we found that LA worked the best for us, and there were probably the majority of the people that wanted to work with us had been coming out of LA. So we thought, you know, we should go out there, you know, and try.
And John, so, you know, in terms of what you're trying to do for the music biz here, are you encountering, you know, bands that want to move as well, or are they pretty, you know, are there a community that just wants to stay here and just want to make it here?
A little bit of both. Like I said, I think many bands don't have a long-term plan, so they're just kind of winging
gigging
it.
Every weekend.
Yeah, just gigging every weekend, just waiting for that thing to come along that's going to propel them.
And what is that thing? Is it is this
nobody
you know,
knows.
Thing that, that
yes.
you know
yeah.
every human has, which is hope, and there's hope that you
yeah
know,
so
of...
that's the thing. I mean, like I was saying with Chaz, they're making their destiny, right? Where a lot of I think people just kind of wait
their
for
big
the call.
Break
yeah
they're
yeah.
big break
no such thing
so yeah. I mean yeah. That's what I see more of.
Well, John, certainly from someone, especially as you help bands with some things that maybe logistically they don't have the skill for, maybe making a nice video with good sound, for example. Mm-hmm. I think it's also true that, you know, I would imagine a lot of musicians will say that their skills might not, the left brain versus right brain, they aren't trained in thinking like a business. They aren't trained in making a plan.
Right.
And in some cases, you would say, just like how a startup founder would have to find a CTO or a business manager or a marketing manager. But how does that work on the musical side? How do you find that missing piece of talent if you, the musician, aren't a business mind?
That's the difficult part. You know, I mean, there's just not enough business here, at least in Honolulu, to warrant a music manager. I mean, there are music managers out there, but you don't have the ability to tour and be constantly playing that would allow you to for a manager to justify, you know, I'm going to take off time from my other job to cross over. So it's very difficult in that sense.
Chaz, I mean, you look like you got some feedback on that.
Oh, no, I was coughing off the microphone.
Did you just luck out that you and your bandmates could, you were unicorns, as they say, that could do all of these different things?
I don't believe that at all, because when I joined the band, that was definitely not the case. And I'm not naturally organized, but I forced myself to be that. And I think the reason why that happened was right out of high school, I was kind of thinking about doing the music thing. I've always loved music. My dad was a musician. And I met this guy who was a music manager. His name is Brett Ortone. He also ran a distribution company. He had a record label, and he had a recording studio with, and his business partner was Emil Garza. So I used to watch both of these guys work. I would shadow them, and I would see the music being made with the bands, and I also saw this guy doing the business. And one of the things that Brett imparted to me was that I should try to learn as much as I could about everything that encompasses my industry, whether it's just, you know, finance, marketing, recording. Because I just, at the time, I just wanted to be a bass player. That was my aspiration, to be a bass player and a singer and a songwriter. But he showed me more. You know, in order to have a long-term career, I needed to aspire to more. And I needed more people to push me towards that aspiration.
And there's guys in every genre of music that are like Chaz. So there's guys that I've seen in the reggae field, in the Hawaiian music field. And you can tell, like, oh, this guy's got his stuff together. You know, like, he knows what he's doing, and they're going to be successful.
Is there enough? I know you said that maybe not enough for a business manager to take on the role, you know, for a band in Hawaii. But is there enough business in Hawaii for a band to survive if you have a niche that you are good in?
I personally, well, it depends on what your definition of survive.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, yeah, you can play, you know, the local scene and get by and things like that. But really, and that's where my career ended, is when I got to the point where I found that, oh, really, in order to make the kind of income that I want to support my family and do all those things, I'm going to have to tour. I'm going to be gone. And all the guys that I've played with, Jake Shimabukuro and Herb Ota Jr. And Justin and everybody, they all tour. They all travel a lot. They're gone a lot of the year, and that just wasn't my thing, you know. But those guys do well.
I did want to ask. I mean, we've talked a little bit about Chaz Street, like Cadence as a startup and a business, but there is a business side to what High Sessions does. You mentioned you described it to your wife as your golf, and right. as any spouse, male or female, of a golfer knows, that means it takes your time, and it does take money to do these things. So is there a sustainability model for High Sessions and the service that you offer to musicians, or is that your community contribution and working for locations and selling real estate is how you eat?
Yeah, exactly. So yes. It really started off as we are a for-profit. We are not a non. We thought about being a nonprofit, but excuse me. Yeah, I mean, the first 3 or 4 years, it cost money to produce the show.
Yes.
It's not free. You know, there's people that we have to pay for the sound and for the music editing and things like that. Now, we get some income from YouTube. We do have sponsorships and things that we do for the TV show. But every year, I was funding the show. So,
right.
And then about year 3 or 4, I got the, enough with that from the wife. You
right.
know, like you got to start. Mm-hmm. This thing got to start either paying for itself, or you can't be funding this thing every year, especially it's benefiting everybody else. And you know, you got to show that it's coming back home
mm-hmm.
somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So we did a Kickstarter last year. This year we finally have some momentum in the Hawaii business community. People are starting to associate High Sessions with quality product, and so. We've had larger businesses coming to us because anything that has to do with music, it's starting to come back to, oh, you should talk to these guys because they're the ones who have kind of the Hawaii music video thing kind of cornered. So we've been able to get a few jobs from there. And if all works out, then this year we should be solvent.
Wow, in the black.
No, in the black. So not just break even, in the black.
We should have a couple of, we can probably take everybody out to a dinner for Christmas or something like that.
Yeah, we'll work for food.
Yeah, we'll work for food. Now, Chaz, you mentioned hacking the music business. I mean,
yes, sir.
And I know you've already alluded to the plan that you have set aside for the 3 months. Can you give us a little bit more specific examples of perhaps hacking the LA
sure.
music biz?
So a lot of people in LA, they would love to work with you because, you know, maybe you're doing something that's really unique.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if they make one false decision, they could lose their jobs, lose their homes, their family life. And so there's everyone's really kind of shaken up a little bit in LA. And so we've met wonderful people in LA, but at the same time, they can't really do anything for us. And so we just keep on doing what we do. We just love on these people. We become their friends because we don't really need them to do anything for us, but we want to create that community. And we found alternative ways for us to survive as a business because we were doing really well here in Hawaii, but we gave up that cushy life to try, you know, the LA thing. And so one of the things that came across our radar was this thing called AirLive. We've always street performed. And that sustains us. And so we're street performing on Santa Monica. And one day these people come up to us and say, hey, we have this contest going on. You should try it. Download this app. And we're like, sure. You know, we didn't do
right.
it because everyone has something they want you to do
right.
when you're street performing, apparently. And the week after they come back and they're like, hey, did you get the app? We're like, no, we didn't get the app. We're sorry. They're like, oh, give me your phone. And they put it on their phone, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, you know, why should we do this? Well, they're like, it's kind of like Periscope. You live stream your performances and look, there's all these people watching you right now. And we're like, oh, okay, so what's the deal with the contest? Well, you could win $300,000 if you win first place and there's no strings attached. And we're like, why didn't you say that first? And so we've been doing that for the last 8 months instead of being diligent about playing more or like growing the fan base in LA. We've put all of our efforts into this single contest. So we're out on the streets or out somewhere playing 4 hours, 5 days a week for the last 8 months.
Wait, okay. So when these guys came to you and said, hey, AirLive, did they fail to say about the 300,000? Where did they get the 300,000? I mean, are these guys legit? Is this like blood money? I mean, what?
Yeah. So we did a lot of research into it before we went gung-ho. And they come out of South Korea, where the music industry is probably the biggest in the entire world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there's the developers, you know, it's an app, it was a startup. And they had a lot of funding from like investors as well as like past things they've done. I think like they created like AIM, but for Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found, you know, it was real. You know, we were talking to real people. We could see that they were making really real moves. And if not, you know, we have a nice lawyer and a nice manager on the horizon that's willing to help us out. But we have every reason to believe that this is going to go through.
Well, in the meantime, though, certainly they are helping grow that audience. You're having people be more aware of you
listen
to your music.
So can we participate in getting your ranking up on
Airline? Yeah, we would love that. It ends in 8 days, but you can go to your app store on your phone and download AirLive. It's AirLive. Yeah, and the way you can help us is by voting, well, not voting, but liking our video. So every video you like, there's a thumbs up button, is a point for us. And some videos are worth more than 1 point. So if the video is an hour long, that's 10 points.
So,
And in the meantime, I should point out, you get to listen to some pretty incredible music.
Yeah, but don't, I mean, that, you got to have the
absolutely. You know, but don't feel like you have to watch all the videos, because there's like, you know, hundreds of videos, you know. We're talking like 5 days a week, 4 hours a day for like the last 8 months.
Okay, so Chaz, I mean, you know, you put your business genius hat on and tell us, what are some of the other tools that you might use to get people like us to upvote your live stream?
So, not to self-promote, but we just won our second Nahoku Hanahana Award, which is like the craziest honor, you know. We're just it's crazy to us still, you know. We don't believe it, but it's not the best business advice to give away your album for free after you win that award, you know, because you could stock it in stores and sell it. But we've decided to give away that album for free on our website, just in hopes that people would help us in this endeavor. We like to say that we're not as cute as the American Idol contestants, but we would still really greatly appreciate your help.
So I can go to Streetlight Cadence website and get the album for free?
So if you go to the website, streetlightcadence.com, there's a tiny little golden ticket in the corner.
I'm going there tonight.
Yeah, he's typing.
You click on that golden ticket, it'll take you to a page, and you'll see the link to download the music. But there's also a video. If you watch the video, it'll give you the instructions. It's like a video tutorial on how to download the app and how to like our videos.
Great.
Sounds fantastic. Yeah. Now, certainly we will check out that website. John, if people want to check out these, because you're doing this for dozens and dozens of musicians, if people want to see the quality work that High Sessions does, where can they go?
HighSessions.com.
And
I'm easy.
And of course, where on YouTube can they find all these videos?
Well, if you go to HighSessions.com, it just links you straight to the YouTube page. So you can follow us at High Sessions on Twitter, Facebook, or
Do you have another Kickstarter coming up or anything? Or anything that you
I think this year, you know, Kickstarter was a lot of work. And so I think this year we should be okay as far as funding. We'll see. But our goal is to really just break even. And then the money after that is hopefully to invest into new shows and new products where we can promote artists even further. So
very good.
An eye on it.
Well, Chaz Umamoto manages Streetlight Cadence. He also plays a couple of instruments. And, of course, John Yamasato is a musician and video producer over at High Sessions. We want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
It's so good to be on. Thanks, man.
I'm glad Chaz was here.
I'm glad you're here,
thank
John.
Thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we talk entrepreneurship and being a part of the Blue Startups Accelerator.
And if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, email us at feedback@bitemarks.org. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at bitemarks.
And you can follow me at Hawaii as we listen to this beautiful music, as our engineer is Rob Carlisle, as well as David Chung, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And of course, we leave you with our song pick of the week. Here's one of our favorite bands. They go by the name of Streetlight Cadence. And of course, the song is I Need You Tonight. See you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.